This week on Barbell Struggle, we talked to two of the top strongman competitors in the United States about how to get stronger without using just barbells and kettlebells.
Yo, this is CTP, and you're listening to the Barbell Shrug Podcast, the number one strength and conditioning podcast for CrossFitters.
If you want to check out the video version, which you should, go to fitter.tv and watch that, because it's way cooler than just listening.
And how do you spell fitter.tv there, Mr. Bledsoe?
F-I-T-R.tv.
He's a good speller. All right, while you're there, definitely go and sign up for the newsletter. As part of signing up for the newsletter, you'll get a video that Mike made where he shows you the top seven snatch mistakes that you're probably making that are keeping you from hitting that next PR and lifting some big weight.
Yeah, look at the seminars, tune into the show, and get ready to become a more awesomer version of
we
you.
We give you the tools you need to succeed.
You become a tool.
All right, we're back. Barbell Shrug. Episode number insert here. We're not sure because we've been filming podcasts back to back to back out of town with really cool guests. So Doug and I are still here at the Arnold Sports Festival in Columbus, Ohio. We have our guest Steve Trippy,
Wu-Tang,
and Brett Somerville. Somerville.
All right.
You can just call
it's
him
on
Big
your
Sexy.
Jacket. I can read it. Nice. I just met him like an hour ago. These guys are strongman competitors competing at Worlds. Brett, you finished 10th, and Steve,
12th.
You finished 12th in the world. Real quick, guys, before we get into discussion, make sure to go to the Facebook fan page and click like. Go to barbellshrug.com and enter your name and your email in the newsletter so we can update you when we have new podcast technique wads and daily BSs and all that noise. So make sure you take care of that. Go to iTunes, give us 5 stars because you know you love us. Show the love. And Chris Moore will give you, was it mental hugs, mind hugs?
Virtual hugs.
Virtual
high five, something like that.
Yeah.
Chris Moore's not here today again. Chris is going to be back on the episode next
week.
Dude,
he's so upset because we've been hanging out with so many cool people and he had to stay home. That's what happens when you have a real job.
He is pretty bummed about it. All right, Steve, tell us who you are and what you do.
All right, well, like you guys said, my name's Steve Trippy. I'm a competitor in the 175 class of strongman. They call it Strongman Fitness Men's. Just finished up.
That's competing. The weight class?
Yeah, 175 pounds.
Okay.
They call it Strongman Fitness because I guess we're supposed to be fit, you know, be able to tie our shoes as well as be strong. So
so Strongman's not just for people that are 350 pounds?
No, there's actually a whole bunch of weight classes. The big ones are the 175s, the 231s, and then heavyweight. But within that, you have other weight classes like under 200, 265 and under, 300 and under. So really just about anyone can do it. We even have women's classes, and a lot of people don't even know about that.
You even let women do it?
Yeah, you'd be surprised what some of the women can do.
There are some beasts out there.
Yeah, the Women's World Championship for the fitness class was actually this weekend as well. So we got to watch some of them compete up on the stage earlier today.
And you guys compete on Friday and Sunday?
Yeah, Friday and Sunday. I didn't compete on Sunday. I didn't make the cut to go through to Sunday. But Brett here did, so he just actually finished competing a couple hours ago.
Hey, Brett, can you tell us about yourself a little bit and how this weekend went?
Yeah, name's Brett Somerville. Just got done competing at the Arnold Amateur World Championships. Finished up day one in fifth place, and then went on to day two, which was today. Had a little bit of a rough day. Topped it off as 10th place, and it's time to go back to the chalkboard and start all over again.
What's your weight class?
300 plus.
What do you weigh?
Right now about 320.
Okay, big boy. You look like you're maybe like 220.
Wow, thank you. Yeah, I just got done with my spray tanning. And my
he's going to be going on for that for months now.
Yeah.
I can't believe you just said that.
Is that a pretty comfortable weight for you? Is a good blend between, you know, being heavy enough where you're strong enough and light enough where you're fit enough to do the medleys and whatnot?
I think it really depends on the type of show you're doing. I've been up to 340. Mm-hmm. Statically, I was definitely strong. Going into this show, I decided to crank up the conditioning, mm-hmm. which helped a lot on day one. Can't complain about that. Mm-hmm. day two, a little bit, you know, static strength wasn't there. Body just wasn't firing. Mm-hmm. You know, no excuses, but, you know, we'll find the perfect blend sooner or later.
Mm-hmm. So most people are probably familiar with strongman just from watching World's Strongest Man on TV, and that's probably the only association they have with the sport for the most part. You know, even myself, like, aside from going to the Arnold every once in a while, like, we had some strongman competitors in our gym for a while, but before that, growing up, all I ever saw was World's Strongest Man. So is the type of stuff that you guys are doing or did this weekend really similar to what we or most people would have seen on TV?
Yeah, yeah. What you see on TV is what we do, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, the weights are adjusted. There's different, you know, you have heavier shows, you have lighter shows. But in a nutshell, yeah, it's basically the same. You know, you're going to pick up a stone, mm-hmm. you're going to probably push a truck, and you're going to pick something heavy off the ground. So.
Mm-hmm. So I know one of the big misconceptions with strongman is that, you know, obviously from the name, they assume that you're big, strong people. And, you know, especially in your case, you're a 300-plus-pound guy. But they don't realize that conditioning is a huge part of it. I know it's something that Steve talks about that, you know, you have to be in good shape to be a strongman competitor. It's not like powerlifting or weightlifting where every event is like 2 seconds long or 4 seconds long. You have medleys that last up to a minute long, and it's full max effort the whole time. You got to actually be in shape.
I think the big misconception, too, is just, you know, we sit around eating cheeseburgers and, you know, we do one lift here, one lift there, where, you know, the training is a lot more intricate than that. Mm-hmm. You have to have the conditioning involved. You have to eat a lot of whole foods, but it has to be good foods. You know, you have to mm-hmm. eat that lean red meat. You have to eat that rice, the cheese, the whole milk. You know, you don't want to put the junk calories in your body. And along with the conditioning and the diet and the heavy training, that's when everything really should be tied up with a bow and pretty good.
Mm-hmm. What does your nutrition look like? Is it different in the off season versus, you know, right before competition? I mean, you described what your nutrition a little bit there, but you can get a little more detail.
For me, I'm pretty consistent year round. I want to stay between the 5,000-7,000 calories a day, you know, which is usually three, you know, shakes and, you know, four meals. Post training, you know, you take in more carbohydrates, you know, more fats, good fats, peanut butter, red meat, and so forth. And other than that, it's just really trying to eat probably every 3 to 4 hours and you know, drinking a whole lot of water. Gotta keep the joints lubed up, and that's really about it. It's pretty basic.
How about you, Trippy?
For me, it has to be a little more targeted because I compete in a weight class. Like I said, 175s. I'm already pretty close to the top of that. I tend to walk around at about 185. Leading into the Arnold, it was a little different. Leading into other contests, a little different. Like Brett mentioned, it depends contest to contest. For me, I'm a big fan of carb backloading because it allows for a rather flexible diet approach, but it still really helps with my recovery, even if I'm cutting weight. But like leading up to the Arnold, I combined a strong carb backloading plan with like carb front loading.
Is that what Kiefer describes, or is there? I know that. I mean, he wrote a book about carb backloading, which is popular with strongman and powerlifters right now. Was that an approach you were taking before that, or is that a general term used by a lot of strongmen?
It's similar. I've taken a lot from Kiefer. I have his book. I have his Carb Night Solution book, but another guy that does it, I tend to follow his approach because I think it's a little more healthy, I guess, mm-hmm. is Jason Ferrugia's Renegade Diet is a form of carb backloading. Basically, rather than, you know, just pounding in whatever fats you want and pounding in whatever carbs you want, you try to focus more on vegetables and lean cuts of meat during the day and your steaks and things like that. And then post-workout, you're a little more targeted. You're not just pounding down cheesecake.
Well, what are you eating? I'm assuming, and from what I know, you're eating a lot of carbs post training. What do those carbs look like?
So a typical day, I'll go through a whole day for you, like on a training day. I tend not to eat breakfast because my work starts pretty early. So I'll go in, I'll work for a little while. My first meal is usually around 9-10 o'clock, and it's usually a higher fat meal. I tend to try to get those healthy fats. Basically a lot of lean meats, a lot of protein, all the way up to training. Once I train, the very first thing I do is I have a post-workout shake, and that's my initial source of carbs. Afterwards, it's pretty much like a pasta or a rice or something like that with dinner. I prefer I prefer the healthier carbs. I don't eat a lot of sweets except around a contest, but that's just because you need the fast energy.
What do you consider like healthier carbs?
Like I said, the rices, the pastas, yams, potatoes, things like that. And I know there's issues with calling them healthier because it all depends on your approach to nutrition, but right. Basically the whole foods. And the strongman diet's going to be a lot more whole foods. Like Brett mentioned, you can't just do the general calories for strongman. Like a powerlifter, as long as they're getting in calories, it's okay. For us, body composition matters a lot more.
Is that because you're doing more total work? You say your volume's higher, and that's probably why you need more higher quality calories? Are you saying you're better than powerlifters?
No, not at all. I'm not as strong as a powerlifter, but at the same time, do I think a powerlifter could match me for reps? Well, if they ate right, you know, I think that's what it comes down to. We have a lot of events that are for high reps. You know, we'll have 60, 90 seconds, and we have to go all out on a clean and press. Now, doing a clean and press for 90 seconds flat, that's tough at a heavy weight. If you're carrying around a lot of extra useless weight that isn't doing anything for you, it's not going to be good, even if you're a heavyweight competitor. Now, if you're a heavyweight powerlifter, you can get away with that because you only have to do one rep and then waddle into the back room. For the lighter weight classes, for powerlifting and especially Olympic lifting, you'll notice they follow a lot cleaner diets than, say, their heavyweight counterparts. But even our heavyweights and strongman tend to eat a lot of whole foods.
Okay. What would you guys consider to be here's a question someone asked on Facebook, which do you think is more important, the physical strength or mental strength, and why? I mean, because with strongman, there's a huge mental component there because it does last longer than just a few seconds.
I think that's the mental part of it's actually huge. I think you have to go into something knowing it's going to hurt. You have to kind of, what personally happens with me is I stroll up to the implement. Before I pick up the implement, everything gets real quiet. Get tunnel vision, almost see nothing but black until that, you know, 10 seconds or 60 seconds or 90 seconds is over. And then when it's over, it all starts coming back to you real slowly. You start hearing the crowd, you start hearing the music, and then it's over. And that's kind of how you have to go into it. You have to be just as mentally strong as physically strong.
I think I got to agree. Mental. A good example I can give you is a yoke walk. You know, you can get under 700-pound yoke. And you can have the strength to do it, but if you start to walk and it waddles and it knocks you over, you have to have the mental strength to immediately pick it back up. And if you're not mentally strong enough, it doesn't matter if you're physically capable of doing it. If it throws you off for a second or two, that second or two can be the difference between first and fifth.
Yeah, I actually competed in a strongman meets a couple times in 2011. And, you know, my background is mostly weightlifting and CrossFit. And one thing I noticed about strongman that was very different than what I had competed in before is with CrossFit, you can always do the weights. I mean, if you're a relatively strong guy, none of the weights are going to be so heavy that you can't get a single rep. And in weightlifting, you're choosing the weights that you're going to try to compete at, and you're going to lift as much as you can, but you pick what's appropriate for you. But I remember showing up, and it was a 650-pound yoke, and I had never put 650 pounds on my shoulders before. And it was one of those things where the mental toughness there that was required was different than the other sports. And that you were like, well, shit, I just have to pick this up. And no matter how hard it is, like you say, you get a little bit of a wobble and you start to fall to the side or something like that. Like, you have to fight it no matter what. You can't choose to go lighter, or you can't choose to, like, take a break whenever you want because you've got 60 seconds to get as far as you can.
It's crushing you.
Yeah.
The whole time it's crushing
you. The weight. You know, if you've never picked that much up before and that goes down your spine and you're trying to walk, it's a mind fuck, really.
Well, you got to have that switch. You know, that's just something I always say. You have to have that switch, you know. You can be holding babies and kissing babies right up till you get to that implement. Then when you get to that implement, you got to flip that switch. And until that event's over with, you know, that's what you just got to do. And you got to grin and bear it, you know.
Have you guys ever... I know for me, I encountered a car deadlift where myself plus most of the field couldn't get a single rep. You guys ever encountered something where you're standing there just kind of shaking your head, like the weight's just too heavy? And
well, you actually saw me do that this weekend. If you saw, I don't know if you caught my medley. I know Doug caught it.
Yeah, we got some footage of it. We'll probably clip it in.
leading up to nod.
Yeah.
we had a medley where we had to carry a sandbag, carry a 230 keg, carry a 250 keg, and all of this we had to carry up to this wheelbarrow that already had weight on it, and then pick the wheelbarrow up and run back. Well, I was watching other competitors go, and they were getting to the 250 keg, and by the time they'd run the first two implements, they were already gassed. So I kind of moved a little slower, you know, took my time with it, but leading up to that, no one had moved the wheelbarrow. Now I got it, but another example is this past Nationals. We had a car deadlift where they threw, you know, just out at the last minute, they were like, oh, let's throw another 200 pounds in the trunk just to make it interesting. And up to my turn, no one had moved it. So I'm sitting there shaking going, well, I got to get at least one rep.
Right.
And I got that one rep, and nice. Then that mental toughness strikes in. You go, well, I got it once. I got to get it for another. It was a max effort lift for me. It was probably a one rep max, but I ended up pulling out three reps. That's just mental strength. I wasn't strong enough to do that. I just kept pulling. And I'm talking like 8-second reps.
Yeah.
So a car deadlift certainly looks cool for the crowd, right? It's very showy. You're lifting a car, and that's very novel. But it's not the same as doing a barbell deadlift.
No.
Right?
No.
So how is it different? Explain that to people that don't know.
Well, I mean, for me personally, like how I feel, I think the car deadlift is great. I think it's great for the crowd. I think it's even great for the competitors because it's something different.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for me, it's really about that barbell. You got a good, strong barbell deadlift that's going to carry over to that easily. You know, I mean, I've encountered plenty of people that could pick up anything with side handles.
Mm-hmm.
But the second they get up to that barbell, you know, all of a sudden they grow a vagina. And I'm not against it. I mean, I enjoy it. Like I said, I think it's great for the crowd. But, you know, if you ask me personally, I'd rather hang with a whole bunch of guys who can pull a lot of weight off the floor of the barbell, you know?
Mm-hmm. So for the car deadlift, though, is it being on a pivot where it's not going straight up and down, it's kind of rocking at it? On an arc, is that?
Yeah,
is
you
that
can lean back
you
into
have to factor
it.
In?
That's a scientific question, so I'll leave that to Trip.
Okay.
with it, it's exactly like you said. It's on a pivot, so and it's also locked into a range of motion. So whereas with a regular barbell, you got to worry about balance and everything.
Mm-hmm.
On this, you don't have to worry about it. So you set your feet a little further to get your posterior chain into it. And then at the same time, as it starts to come off the ground, you can lean back. You start using your quads. It's, in my opinion, more total body than a regular deadlift. It's at least more pressure on all the muscles.
Mm-hmm. So you can be leaning back, and you're not going to have to take a step because you're not going to fall over because it's not going to move.
No, as long as your feet are positioned properly, that's actually what a lot of amateur competitors mess up is they don't set their feet properly so that they can lean back.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is as the thing starts going backwards – because they set their feet like they would with a regular deadlift, it's out in front of them, and now they're leaning forward instead of leaning backwards. Mm-hmm. So they're basically balancing on their toes. And as anyone that lifts knows, you want to drive through the heels.
Yeah, I noticed when I had to go do the car deadlift, I'd never, ever done it before. It was 100% novel. And yeah, it was one of those things where, like, I was adjusting. You know, you had a 60-second clock to do as many as you could. It's like I was constantly moving my feet, trying to figure out which one was. I was looking at the other guys. There's like one other guy in my weight class that could actually move it. And we're like trying to figure out what he was doing that was different. Well, what he was doing is different. He had a deadlift suit on, so that kind of helped.
What I'll bring up there is any listeners.
He's one of those guys.
What's that?
Holy crap.
Oh, are we going to start talking about gear?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, no, I'm not going to. I'm just not going to buy gear for one competition. I've never worn gear before. So, like,
raw, huh?
I just don't know. And I've never been interested enough in competing at that level in those sports to learn how to, because I understand, like, I've worked with powerlifters that wore gear. I put it on them, you know, I helped get it on them and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I understand that you basically have to learn how to squat again. You have to learn how to deadlift.
It's like
again.
His own separate
skills. Yeah, it's a whole new thing, you know.
It's definitely
I've never invested the time in doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have anything against it. It's just I'm not gonna be like, oh, it's not fair. It's like I just didn't have it. But that made a difference. You know, he was one of the guys wearing a suit, and then the guys that weren't definitely couldn't get it. But if you wanted to win, you should have showed up with a suit for sure.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
I don't actually think a suit helps as much on a car deadlift simply because it's more quad dominant pull being side handle. What I will bring up, though, for anyone that's potentially listening to this and they might be interested in strongman is if you're ever in that position, you show up to an event, you haven't done it ask someone. Strongman competitors, like even my own competition, even the guys that I'm fighting tooth and nail, if I went to them and I said, hey, look, this event's coming up. Can you help me out? They would stop. They'd give me the shirt off their back. They'd show me everything they could. Strongman's one of those sports that it's really very, very, there's a lot of camaraderie there. You can walk around. You can have never done an event. On Friday, I was missing equipment because I had an hour to pack for this meet because I got out of work late before my flight.
Those sons of bitches.
Yeah. I was missing equipment. I'm walking around. Hey, I'm talking to my coach. I'm going, hey, I need Olympic shoes. I don't have any. And one of the other competitors, Brandon McDonald, just walks up and he goes, hey, what size are you? You know, if we're not going in the same heat, we can share my shoes, you know, if they fit. This is a guy I'm going to be competing against. Him and I are going for these top spots. He's one of the top competitors in the world. He ended up taking third, you know. And here he is offering me his shoes without me even asking him. That's the kind of people most strongmen are. So yeah, if you're ever in that position, just ask.
There's a couple things that are definitely going to happen at a strongman show. The camaraderie is amazing, and it seems like everyone's got a thick chick. So those are probably the two biggest things.
I wouldn't say everyone.
Both are a plus.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so take us through the events that you guys did this weekend. Yeah. Explain what happened. Kind of, I know you did really well on some events, not so well on some other events. That some things didn't go according to plan. Kind of walk us through the weekend.
All right, I'll go through my first four events because they're quicker than Brett's. I had a 225, 2.25-inch thick bar clean and press. That's usually a pretty good event for me. I'm usually hitting about 5 or 6 at 225.
It's called the axle.
The axle. Yeah. Yeah, we tend to, if you ever want to train for it, I recommend 1.75-inch inner diameter pipe. You just put some collars on it and cut it to 7 feet. That's how we train. It's usually a pretty good event for me. I'm a decent presser because I'm fast and explosive, but I was going into the show with a torn rotator cuff. I got my first rep, and like I said, I didn't have Olympic shoes that fit, and I kind of lost my footing, almost broke my knee off. So they didn't count the first rep. I ended up only getting 3, so that set me back. The second event was the yoke walk into a sled push. This is where I really shit the bed. I'm usually really good on yoke. There aren't a lot of people that have ever beaten me on it. And at the last minute, they changed my lane, changed my yoke to a yoke that wasn't set up for me. There's different heights. You'll see all the competitors are different sizes. I had to pick up about...
And they normally take your measurement ahead of time. It's not like exactly. You can just change it on the spot.
Exactly, but they changed mine on the spot. They moved me to a different one. They didn't have the bolts in tight enough, so I picked this thing up late because I just jumped into it as they were saying go, and it wasn't tightened.
And for those of you at home, Trippy's not a big thinker. He's just a doer, so he just jumped right in there. And
yeah, when Mike Johnson of the ASC is yelling at you, competitor's ready, you know, I know him. If I'm not under that yoke and taken off by the time he blows that whistle, I'm not getting credit for it. He's well known for that. So I just got under it, and I just did it. I finished the yoke pretty fast, but by the time I got to the sled push, you know, we got that marbleized floor. It was still wet. I was just spinning my feet for a few minutes before I finally got set up and moved it. It was a 600-pound sled. So the yoke was easy for me, even though it was messed up. The sled cost me some time, and... That should have been my event. That should have been an event I did real well on, and I shit the bed. Third event was an event I hit exactly what I wanted to. It was a deadlift medley. We had that axle again, 435 pounds was our first deadlift. Then it was a 585 straight bar. For those of you that don't follow strongman, that's currently 40 pounds over the NAS 175-pound class conventional deadlift record. It was like 545 or something. So we had a 585 bar, then a 730 frame, basically a side handle deadlift. And then we got to that car deadlift you were talking about, and we were supposed to pull it for reps. Well, I had a lot of, I didn't have a 585 deadlift when the events came out. I had to train. I went on a deadlift specialization routine to bring my deadlift up for this. So I wanted to hit just one rep straight through because I knew that'd be points on the board. And I'm not a strong deadlifter. I'm one of those guys that's faster than he is strong. You guys talk about, you know, strength not being the most important thing in strongman. Well, I'm the epitome of that. I'm not very strong, but I'm fast. I've got good endurance, and I make up for it in technique. Now, I hit one rep on each of those within the time limit and just called it there. The last event was a medley. I'm pretty good at medleys because I have good conditioning, and you guys saw that. You'll put up the video. It was a 200-pound sandbag. They changed it at the last minute. It was supposed to be a keg. a 230 a 230 keg carry to the sled, and then a 250 keg carry to the sled, and then basically pick the wheelbarrow, and then you pick the wheelbarrow up and you run it across the thing, and that was basically my show. So I had a pretty good finish on the medley, but it wasn't enough to bump me back up to the top spots, and only the top four got to go to day two, which was really where my good events were. But I had time to train, I just didn't make it.
What were the day two events then? You made it to day two, right?
Yeah, I mean, my day one was a 325 axle. You know, that went as planned. The yoke was 950, the sled was 700. I think I took second in that overall.
On the yoke, how far did you get and how much time?
It was a 950 yoke.
He had about an 11-second yoke run. He doesn't know that, but I was timing him.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But, you know, that went good overall. Then we had the deadlift medley, 635 axle, 715 barbell, 830 frame. Then the car for reps, that went, you know, I got 9 on the car to finish that. That was up there. And then the wheelbarrow, again, that was up there, probably top 5. That was you know, really good day for day one. And day two happened, and it was a 210 dumbbell. And I wowed the fans with one fucking rep on that.
Well, one rep of what? What do you got to do with it?
You got to clean it and then press it over your head.
Is it a circus dumbbell?
Yeah.
One hand.
Just a big dumbbell, yeah.
Are you not allowed to use the other hand, or is it just one hand only?
Yeah, just one hand only.
The candle?
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
two hands yeah. to clean, one
two,
hand
two
to press.
Yeah, two hands to clean, shoulder. One to press, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I hit one rep on that, and that was pretty embarrassing. Then we got to the old Husafelt, and yeah, that's...
I love the Husafelt.
Really, that's really...
That's a man maker right there.
No, really, that's a horrible fucking event.
I wish, when that started getting used, I was like, that's the worst event ever.
Yeah,
that, if you want to talk about mental strength.
Yeah.
I think that's the one.
Yeah, yeah, that is pretty bad. I'd almost want my nuts wrapped in a rubber band and do that.
That's the one where our buddy Jay was carrying it and passed out carrying yeah. it.
He passed out
while... He wasn't breathing. He was walking, and he just passed out. His head didn't hit the ground because he's too big for his head to touch the ground when he's laying on his back.
It's true.
Actually, I just saw him on Facebook right before we posted. He ran an 1,100-pound yoke for 50 feet or something like that. Which is pretty
that dude, yeah, that dude picks up like big yokes and sprints.
Yeah,
that's awesome. That's
ridiculous.
Awesome.
What was his name?
Jay Holder.
I think I've heard of him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He does have a decent yoke.
Yeah, he's a good yoke. Yeah. So sorry, interrupted.
Yeah. Oh, no, not at all. Nothing really to interrupt. Then we went to the 410 stone to 54 inches, and I promptly laid a fucking goose egg on that. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, that was pretty much, yeah. Yep,
Why do you think that happened?
It was a high bar.
You know what? There's just really no excuses. My goal was, I tore my bicep in January, last January. My goal was to qualify for Nationals. I did that at the 7th month mark. Then I wanted to qualify at Nationals for the Arnold. I did that. Then I just wanted to make it to day two. I thought that was realistic.
Mm-hmm.
After what happened day one, I really thought I had a decent shot. And then day two happened, and just... absolutely no excuses, just body wasn't there, and had a rough day, but just come back stronger. That's about it, you know. And just real quickly, I'd like to thank Dion Wessels,
mm-hmm.
and Mike Johnston, and all the helpers, and you know, everyone else that's just, you know, supports the sport. And the competitors were awesome, every single one of them, just real quick, you know. And
yeah.
I think it's strongman's come a long, long way since I started.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I definitely like to see that.
Yeah, they do a good job putting on events. They put ours in on last year for Nationals.
Yeah, I mean, they really are. They're really precise. They're really crisp. They're really
Real fair too. And it's hard to come across competitions where it seems like it's fair across the board. I feel like it's pretty fair.
Yeah, they really do it, and they have to deal with a lot. You know, there's a lot on their plate. You know, between equipment moving and everything else, so. I just got to give them
and
a little
shout out.
And
strongman competitors being so emotional.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We'll be crying with Dion yelling at us.
Actually, I'm about to get some hand lotion, some tissues, and rent a notebook.
Yeah. Listen to some Lorena McKennitt.
Yeah, Adele.
Oh, there we go.
All right, guys, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to hit up some more of these questions that people posted on Facebook.
Yeah, and I also want to talk a little bit about your guys' actual training when we come back, too.
Sounds super.
Outstanding.
Hey guys, this is Rich Froning, and you're listening to the Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to fitter.tv.
All right, we're back with the strong man dudes. I wanted to hit up some questions. Did you have some questions about training, Doug?
Yeah, and we went through the events, and we talked earlier about how strongman isn't the same thing as powerlifting. It's not the same thing as weightlifting. It's a completely separate sport. So do you guys train like powerlifters? Like, do you do traditional weight training, or do you just do, do you train just like the events? How do you train? What do you do? What do you do if you want to be a strongman competitor?
My training has evolved year to year. And basically what I found for me that works the best is, Monday is usually a squat day.
Mm-hmm.
Wednesday would be an overhead day.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday would be some type of events. I train events a little differently. I like to do things uphill,
mm-hmm.
Yoking uphill, farming uphill, sled drags uphill. I also, this time around, I implemented a lot more conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
If that meant just picking up a keg and just going the distance I had to go with it,
mm-hmm.
that's what I did. If it meant running a heavy yoke and then grabbing farmers and going after distance,
mm-hmm.
That's what I did. And it's really an evolution. How, back in the days of old strongman, a lot of them were just powerlifters or really strong Olympic lifters.
Mm-hmm.
Bodybuilders, now, even.
Bodybuilders. Lou Ferrigno, Franco Colombo, the world strongest man.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, you can't do that. You can't do just 5-3-1, or you can't mm-hmm. do just the cube method or whatever fancy schmancy thing that's out there. You got to listen to your body. You'll learn,
mm-hmm.
and everyone will find their training niche, basically.
Mm-hmm. You said you had a squat day and an overhead day and then kind of an event day.
Yeah.
On your squat day, are you squatting first, squatting heavy, and then doing more strongman-specific stuff afterward?
If I'm out of season, I'll rotate. It'll either be a heavy deadlift
mm-hmm.
to like maybe a lighter box squat.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have that type of rotation. Leading up to this show, basically what I was doing is I was trying to do actually conditioning before I even squatted.
Okay.
So what I do is maybe do some truck pushes,
mm-hmm.
3-4 sets, then go in there and try to hit, not a maximum box squat, but, maybe 3 reps. And what I do is I try to do about 4 to 5 sets of 3 reps with that.
Mm-hmm.
Something within that 85, percent range that wasn't going to kill me, but still keep my hips powerful and stuff like that. Because, you got to go yoke on Saturday or
mm-hmm.
you got to do some type of moving event on Saturday. So it's really just checks and balances.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Steve?
My training depends on what I'm training for, whether I'm training for anything at all. I actually have a distinct off season and on season. In the off season, I like to do a little more volume. I like to, I'll probably hit more accessory work, trying to hit my weaknesses. Pretty much all my training is total body. Strongman's always total body.
Is it the ultimate total body fitness system?
I wouldn't say ultimate. I mean, that sounds like something I'm working in the shake weight and I'm not keeping up with Billy Blanks here, but at the same time, like, I think you can do an upper lower for strongman. I think you can do total body. I don't think you can do body part splits anymore. There were guys that were for a while, and you'll notice those are the ones with the injuries. Because you can't teach your body to work in isolation and then do a 2-day strongman contest.
That's more of a powerlifter's approach usually, is doing a split, right?
More bodybuilding, I think. Like, they'll want to hit tricep extensions and then skull crushers and then, something along those lines.
You can hit upper lower similar to a West Side style, and do strongman just fine. But if all of a sudden you're hitting like 6-7 different moves for biceps, you're teaching your biceps how to work without your back. All of a sudden you're going to tear a bicep. When we have a lot of bicep intensive events,
is that what happened to you, Brett? Too many bicep curls?
Actually, no.
How did you tear your bicep?
I tore my bicep pretty freaky. Most people do it on a tire, an axle, or a stone. I actually did on a block press. I was picking up the block. It was a 300-pound block. I went to clean it, and it went from maximum tension to no tension, and the
snap.
Tear happened, and. But also, too, I learned from that. Like,
mm-hmm.
I haven't curled. I haven't done a tricep pushdown in over a year. Mm-hmm. And, I learned that to do these full bodies, and you know, people always want to bring up their CNS and, you know, to do all that, you don't want to burn your body out doing things that are just totally irrelevant to what you're training for. You need to, you know, if you're going to be doing farmers and stones and keg carries, your biceps are going to get plenty strong, they're going to get plenty thick, they're going to get plenty big. Mm-hmm. You know, you shouldn't have to sit there with a 20-pound dumbbell doing preacher curls.
Yeah, you got to focus on the things that give you the biggest bang for your buck.
Yeah, exactly.
We got some questions off Twitter.
Yeah. Well, these are off the Facebook fan page, actually. What is it that you love about what you're doing, and what keeps you motivated and coming back for more day after day?
For me, I think it's just a battle with myself. I mean, not to sound cliche. It's just I want to beat myself. I don't look at competitors' lists. I don't really comb the internet to see who's doing what. I mean, yeah, I mean, sometimes if something really freaky, I'm going to YouTube that son of a bitch.
Right,
but
right.
You know what I mean? Other than that, it's just as long as I'm progressing and I'm getting stronger and my placings are high, that's what I care about. And, you know, and also, too, I think what drives me, too, is like my brother, my training partners, my family. I don't want to let them down. And, you know, I think that's kind of my approach to things. Motivation.
For motivation, for me, I got to say the same thing as Brett. You know, I like to better myself. I like to constantly improve. But at the same time, you know, you guys know me. I'm into shiny things. I really like medals. So it's kind of cool to leave with, like, a nice samurai sword or something. What I love about it, though, is that, as you guys know and I've mentioned many times, I have lifting ADD. I love lifting to death. But if I'm doing the same – when I was powerlifting and doing the same three movements, well, I hated the bench, you know. I didn't even really like the squat that much. But, okay, so there's one movement that I really like, and then I'm doing these other two all the time. Well, I got bored doing three movements. Well, in Strongman, we're doing seven movements a contest, you know.
And you don't know what movements might be.
Yeah, I don't know what those movements might be until 3 months out. Some contests, and I love this concept, it's starting to really gain traction, is these blind contests. They'll tell you, hey, we're going to pick out of these 15 events, show up ready to do anything, and then they're going to pick five of those.
I like that.
Yeah, I love it, because then you see who the real athlete is. You don't see who really, this guy trained really hard on these five events and got good at them. Okay, cool.
Yeah, that's who's going to shine when it's a surprise. You know, that event that maybe no one has encountered before, the athlete's the one that can figure it out the quickest.
Exactly. It brings the athleticism into it, and that's really what I love about strongman. There's athleticism, there's endurance, there's cardio, there's pain tolerance. And I'm not a one rep max guy. My one rep max deadlift is around 600 at 175, you know. That might seem high to a lot of people, but for a strongman competitor, most of them are hitting in the mid sixes. Some of them are hitting close to seven in my weight class. You know, there's guys out squatting me by 100 pounds, but if they can't move, if they're not athletic, if they can't adapt to a new event in a matter of weeks, I'm going to beat them.
It's about being well-rounded. Me personally, I hate the one trick pony. And I've mentioned this to my training partners, you know, you can have one event. Okay, great. You're a great presser. All right, that's one event. You got four more events, or you got, you know, six more events. And, you know, that's what keeps you on top, is being able to go into a show and saying, listen, all right, I got six events. Maybe I'm not great at all six, but I'm really good at four or five of them. And that's what's going to carry you. Not just, I have an amazing overhead, or I have an amazing yoke, or I'm just a deadlifter. And I think that's what separates the good strongman from the, I'm just going to post a picture on Facebook of me doing my one awesome event, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is there any events or movements that you hate? Like, what's your favorite one, and what's the one you hate the most?
I love the circus dumbbell. I've hit over body weight on that. You know, I've hit 185-pound one-arm press.
That's legit.
That's entirely athleticism, though. It's, okay, I have to get my whole – when you're holding something, it's uneven on the body. You have to stabilize it, and then you have to throw all your leg power through your core up into that shoulder to throw it up into the air. And then you have to time it just perfectly. So you drop under it in time, lock it out, but you're immediately tight so that you can stand back up with it. That's athleticism.
Core stability on top of that.
Exactly. So that's my favorite event. It's probably the one I'm best at. I'd put myself up against anyone in the world in my weight class and in most other weight classes for that event. I also tend to love the yoke. in terms of events I hate, you know, I try not to hate them. I'm not.
He's a lover.
Well, yeah. as soon as you hate it, you know, it becomes tougher to train it. It's that mental thing. Brett here hates the Hosafill. Well, ask him how many times the last training cycle he trained the Hosafill stone, you know. It becomes really hard to really put your effort 110% into it. I guess, you know, I was never big on farmers.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to hammer those until I got good at them. In this event, we didn't have a farmers, but we had that wheelbarrow. Well, I blew that away.
Yeah, I find that people tend to not like the events they suck at.
Yeah, well, that's a thing. I mean, you got
or
people
the
just
opposite,
train what they're good at.
They suck at the events that they hate, which that I think would be even more specific.
What? Well, that's where you said
it. You said they hate the events they suck at. I think you're going to suck at whatever you hate. I think it's the opposite. You're causing effects backwards.
I get it.
Wow.
Holy. Could you just
like y'all are on the same page.
We had a discussion about this the other night. Was it the chicken or the egg that came first?
Genetically speaking, it was the egg, because when you first recognize a new species in terms of evolution.
Really, you had to go down there.
In terms of evolution, they first recognize it when the DNA is completely comprised. So it would be the egg stage. I'm sorry, Mike.
Well, we just thought that we had the wrong chicken.
We could shut down the internet. We figured everything out. All right, Mr. Scientist. I know you used to work for a company, or you interned with a company in Memphis, and which is when we met you, that dealt with a lot of low back injuries. A lot of...
NuVasive. They work specifically with athletes on spinal reconstruction surgery.
Mm-hmm. And we got a question on Facebook or Twitter asking about how to train around low back injuries as a strongman competitor, as a strength athlete. And I know you had worked for that company, and you've also dealt with that as an athlete. So kind of talk about how you came back from a low back injury, what your low back injury even was, and kind of, you know, just talk about that whole topic.
Well, I blew out my L5-S1 at dinner. I turned sideways and sneezed. This was roughly about 3 weeks after setting the USAPL Pennsylvania State deadlift record in the 148s. I blew my back out sneezing. So,
lucky.
Absolutely. And I attended a lot of rehab. You know, I worked with two different physical therapists that I couldn't really afford. I had MRIs done, you know. And I met with all these guys that said, oh, stay on the stability board, do this, do that. And I tried that for about a year. I started interning right before I interned in Memphis with a company in Virginia. And about halfway through that, I gave up on the physical therapy. And I said, you know what? My back's always going to hurt in the mornings. I'm just going to have to deal with it. I'm going back to lifting. And what I realized was the stronger my back got, the stronger my trunk got, the entire core musculature, the less my back hurt. And it really came down to stretching the muscles that needed to be stretched. For me, if my hip flexors were tight, my back was arched, and that put even more pressure on it.
Yeah, a lot of people have the misconception about, oh, my back feels tight. What can I do to stretch my back?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I want to say up to about 90% of cases, it's the opposite. It's the hip flexors that are tight pulling you into anterior pelvic tilt. That's going to arch the lower back. And if you have a lower back injury, that's going to put the stress on them. Also, the other side of that is if you have tight hip flexors, if they're tonic tight hip flexors, chances are your glutes aren't firing properly. Well, now your posture is even more screwed up. So for me, it came down to fixing that. Which came from, I started squatting again, my hips loosened up, and I started stretching my hip flexors again, and my hips loosened up. And then I started doing speed deadlifts, and the first thing I could do was really front squats. I couldn't back squat for quite a while, and that brought up my core strength. And as I got better, well, holy shit, my back stopped hurting. A big change, other than that, the only other big change, and I don't want to jump on the bandwagon. I don't know if it's still a bandwagon because this was a few years ago, but Louis Simmons reverse hyper, you guys had one of those. And if you remember, I hit that thing for 20, 30 reps every warm-up, every workout.
We still have it.
Oh, outstanding.
Yeah.
I think that made a big difference. If this is coming from one of your lifters working out at Faction, definitely I'm a huge fan of that reverse hyper, both from a strengthening standpoint and a rehab standpoint. But really what it came down to it for me, and I think it does depend on the back injury, is strengthening the muscles that need to be strengthened, specifically the core musculars, the obliques, the TVA, even the rectus to a fair degree, though most people don't have a weak rectus abdominis if they've been training for a while.
Of course, the erectus.
we did do a three-part technique wad on training specifically for core stability that relates really well to what you're talking about. So if you're in the audience and you're listening to this and you haven't seen that yet, go look that up. We did an anti-rotation, anti-lateral flexion, and anti-extension technique was training specifically for core stability. So we can give you some good examples on kind of what he's talking about. Maybe not the whole picture, but it's a good starter for it.
So, Brett, whenever they get to your love-hate
what
movements or events.
I can answer that one for him.
Yeah, I think we already know that he hates the Husafeld.
You know, no, I mean, all right, listen.
Front carrying in general.
You know, if I have my Achilles heel, it's probably the Hus. Well, other than that, like really everything else, I can't say, hey, I really do like it. I think it's just different challenges, you know, everything challenges differently. But yeah, you know, that's about it. I'm really catching a lot of Britney Spears here with the Will I Am in the background.
Oh, yeah. We can hear it, but it won't pick it up on the
Oh,
recording.
Okay. I was just curious.
It's picking up some random radio station, but nobody else can hear it in the audience.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we actually shut the podcast down the other night. We're like, shit, this is gonna be on the thing. Yeah. And it ended up we couldn't even hear it.
I'm not complaining, you know, a little Britney bad, you know.
I got a really good question here. Is there a different approach to training and culture from other countries? Where is the biggest growth in the sport happening?
Wow. I think just from what I've seen, I think it used to be the Europeans dominated a lot.
America.
And now you have the Americans really coming through. I mean, if you look at Worlds, or you look
America.
About, you know, when we go over there, you know, you guys got, you know, we got Jenkins, we got Poundstone, we got, you know, Ortmeier for a
Shaw.
While. Shaw. I mean, we've got, you know, up and down. I think the growth in America, I've just seen it just from competing for as long as I have, how tough the competition has gotten at nationals or just to qualify mm-hmm. for a show. You know, you could usually just kind of walk into a show and knew you, okay, there's my qualifier. Can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it was a picture of Shaw standing next to Poundstone that I saw on Facebook the other day, and, like, it made Derek Poundstone look like he wasn't even that big.
No, Brian Shaw is the world's largest land mammal, so.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and again, he's a very nice, humble guy. And,
yeah. So nice.
That just goes back
how
to.
How big
it,
is
you know.
He, roughly?
Well, I don't know if the audience can really, like, zoom in on my quad, but That'd basically be like
massive
one of his
quad. Here.
One of his, if you could really see the hamstring separation.
He's wearing pants, and he thinks
that's
people can
basically,
see his
quad. That's basic. I mean, I'll roll them up for you guys, you know. But we got to keep it like PG-13. But that's basically the size of his forearm.
Yeah, no, Shaw's.
He's 440. Yeah. I want to say 6'8".
So yeah, why would you say
440 like you'd think.
Yeah,
6'8", 440 pounds.
Shit.
What would you say the reason is for strongman growing in the United States probably more than the other countries?
I blame Dion.
I think Dion. I really do. I think Dion. I think there's a lot yep. more promotions out there. Like, I mean, before, too, you would only have maybe three shows on East Coast, you know, and you know, that might be it. Now, you'll have 3-in-1 weekend.
So you think that just that having more events is going
to... More events, more people are shown the sport. More people are involved in sport, and that's what it needs, you know?
She has a whole system in place that just breeds competition. I had this jacket that I'm wearing, I had to fight tooth and nail just to earn it. Now, at other countries, they just show up at a nationals, and, you know, if they do okay, hey, look, you're on Team Finland. And this isn't like a shot at Finland, or I don't know what the other countries do. But for the most part, no other country has a, you have to qualify for this show and then qualify for that show, and then maybe you get an invite to this show. And that whole system, including our amateur to pro system, just breeds competition. And so just to get to that stage, just to get to that Arnold stage for America means you're qualified. If you look at our class, the top four guys were all American.
It just makes me curious because, I mean, like, I love weightlifting, and that's one of the biggest... You know, the USAW is always like, how can we grow the sport? So maybe we should look at a sport like strongman where
Dion.
It is growing, you know?
Yeah.
So why do you think these other countries have strongman, like, so prevalent? Like you mentioned Finland, Norway, Sweden, Latvia, Lithuania. Like, all those countries kind of in that same little block of Northern Europe seem to gravitate towards strongmen.
It's a culture. I actually train with a guy, Savar Sigurdsson. He's a very good friend of Benny Magnussen's. He was Hoff Thor's handler here for the Arnold Classic Pro. He's friends with Stefan Solvi Peterson, you know. And all of these guys are very tight-knit community. Like, when I say he knows all three of those guys, I'm not saying, oh, they all train at the same gym. I mean, they would travel hours just to train with each other. And in Iceland, it's a culture. It's a culture of strength. His wife lifts. His kids are already way into lifting weights, you know, and they were raised in America. It's just, we're Iceland. We're strong. You know, so at least from that, I can give that perspective that it's very important to them to not be physically mediocre. They want to see what their bodily limits are. I don't think that's the case in America, except with athletes. Most non-athletes don't ever see that perspective.
Yeah. All right, I want to ask a couple questions from Gregor. I don't know if you guys follow All Things Gym.
Absolutely.
Yeah, He hosts a really awesome blog if you haven't checked it out.
Allthingsgym.com.
Yep. That word.
Gregor's
he posts a lot of
you
our
really
stuff.
You really are his yang, aren't you, Doug?
he asks, how many spare biceps do you travel with? But seriously, would you change something about the sport to reduce these injuries? I guess the bicep injuries.
Listen, every sport has, you know, a thing. I mean, you know, you have tennis elbow, you have football players with knee problems, you have weightlifters with back problems. I think once you accept that there's certain risks and rewards to everything, I think that's what it's about. When you're talking bicep specific, there really isn't. It's either going to go or it's not going to go. Like, you know, I've been down that road and I asked the doctor, I think 5 times, you know, I looked at old training logs. Did I do something that was totally abnormal or stupid in my training for my bicep to tear? And I look back at it and maybe I could what if a couple things, but you know, doctor went in there and said it was time it was going to go, you know, and I just think that's part of the sport.
Shit yeah. keeps getting heavier. If you look at the weights they did in World's Strongest Man in the 1970s and then you watch my weight class, dude, the 175s doing weights, we're right up there with them. As shit gets heavier, things get more competitive. People are going to hurt themselves. Brett said, oh, you know, I tore my bicep on a 310 block press. Well, let that set in. This is a block. It's a steel rectangular shaped, I don't know what the rectangular cube is, but it's that thing. It's awkward. It's ugly. And it's not something a normal person would see and say, hey, I wonder if I can put this over my head. That's a heavy weight to be putting over your head, and shit's going to go. It's going to happen at some point, and I'll probably tear one of mine.
Yeah,
but I'm gonna compete like it's not until if I let that fear in the back of my mind, I'm not gonna train hard enough. So I'm gonna train like it's not a possibility until it happens.
All right, last question is also from Gregor. Also, how do you feel about the limited number of events in modern strongman competitions compared to the creative events of the past?
Limited.
I don't think really it's limited at all. I think if you're talking about,
I can name 30 right now.
Yeah,
just.
I think what he's referring to is, like, you know, the old days when they would put a backpack full of bricks on your back and tell you to run around the track quick, or if he saw refrigerators as a yoke.
Well, I think, like, what I saw is they were, you know, they had a lot of
wrist rolling.
Yeah, things like that.
You know, but I think over time we learned that phased out because that really wasn't a strong man. That's not proving that you're strong. You know, running around with 300 pounds on your back in a book bag and going around the track doesn't really do anything. Now, if you're talking about, you know, picking up a 400 pound pair of farmers and running with it, that's something a little different. I don't think that it's limited. I think it's how the public views it. It's tough for the public to look at 800 pounds on a barbell and think that's heavy. But if you see a car deadlift, the public goes, wow, that's a car.
Exactly.
Right.
And that's the difference between the athletes and the public, and you know that's
you think
how
maybe
I
you
think
need
about
a certain
it.
Level of sensationalism for it to be popular
at the bigger shows. Absolutely, you want those keg tosses, you want that wooden log press, you want the car deadlift, you want the things that a person can look at and go, "Holy shit, that's a log he's pressing overhead." If I give them a barbell and they walk in and they see that, oh, Well, how much does that weigh? Well, sometimes they don't even ask what the weight on our thing is. I did an expo 2 weeks before Worlds out in Virginia, and there were some bodybuilding guys, there were some CrossFitters, and by the end of the expo, we had guys gathering around, and I was still doing warm-up runs on the yoke. I only had about 5'10 on the yoke, and I did a sprint, and some guy goes, "Wow, that's heavy." He had no idea what was on there, but he could look at it, and he could go, "Oh, that's heavy."
That's a good point.
It's the visual appeal. They like seeing kegs getting thrown. They like seeing stuff like that. And maybe that's what he means when he says limited, is those are the events people see. But in any show, I can go on NASstrongman.com, come to upcoming contests, and look through. And every contest will have different events. And if a promoter, if he wanted to promote a show and he wanted a different event, said, "Hey, I'm going to have this event." Cool. If you invent a new event and you want that to be popular, throw it in a show. Tell someone that's posting a show, you know, we'll do it. If it's a good show and I like the events, I'll show up and I'll do it.
So there's no standards.
No.
For which to everyone needs to, you know, you can't.
No.
You can only choose from these 20 events and that's it.
Yeah, no, there aren't standards.
They can get as creative as they really desire.
Yeah, I mean, personally, me, I'd like to see, you know, maybe something a little bit more, you know, maybe wheelbarrow full with some big-chested girls.
And, side calf pose.
You know, I think that would be a crowd pleaser for the most part.
Where you're going with this.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But, you know, like Steve said, it's how the promoter wants to do it, the creativity involved, also, you know, what type of competitor he's going to get for that show. But I think as a whole, man, Strongman's growing huge, and I think it's definitely going places.
Cool. All right, we're going to wrap this one up. I'll give you guys the last word here in a second. Doug, you want to plug? What's your plug?
Yeah, I'll plug Simple Strength since Chris Moore's not here to do it for me. Simple Strength is Chris Moore's seminar where he talks about how to get stronger, how to program for strength. He even put an extra video on there just the other day talking about how to warm up for a one rep max, which was a great addition to that product. So if you're interested in Simple Strength and learning about how to get stronger and how to program for strength specifically, you can go to barbellshrug.com, click on the shop, click on seminars, and click on the Simple Strength product and read all about that product for more information. Steve, what do you got, man? You got something to plug?
I guess just trainstrongman.com is our home gym. That's where I train at the Morehouse Manor. Anyone in the Raleigh, North Carolina area or ever passing through wants to try some events, you're welcome to join us. But that's where we post. In the future, we'll be posting instructional videos for anyone that wants to like get into the sport. They're gonna be very basic. They're not gonna be like top level tips. It'll just be like, hey, you want to learn how to log press? This is how you log press. You want to pick up an Atlas stone? This is how you do it. Because that's what we find is the biggest issue in strongman is people don't know how to get started if they don't have a training crew. So if you're interested in that in the future, trainstrongman.com is going to have some stuff. I'm wearing the t-shirt, I guess.
Zoom in.
Boom. They're not going to be able to focus on it with you know, this perfect chest here. I don't even bench press. So I don't know why I'm
just
saying
so
that.
Ripply, it's hard to read the words.
Exactly. Those abs really.
It's the deep cuts.
Exactly. Like a roadmap over here.
Oh, are you serious?
What's up, bro? You got anything?
I just got a few. GlobalStrongmanGym.com.
Oh, yeah, Hans.
That's Hans Pierman in New York City. He's got great things. I'd also like to plug Joe's Driveway. That's where it all started, up there in New Paltz, New York. And, you know, just like to thank the ShopRite Red Meat section and, you know.
Boar's Head Strength.
Boar's Head and, you know, the wifey and family and everyone else and all the support and the great competition. That's really about it, man.
Excellent. All right, guys, don't forget to go to barbellshrug.com, sign up for the newsletter, check out the shop to see if you want
to. See what, Mike? What do they want to do in the shop?
They might want to get a t-shirt that says Barbell Shrugged on it, or they might want to check out some of the seminars in there.
There you go. All
that right, place guys. Has horrible customer service.
That's true.
No. The t-shirts are usually on back order, so they take a little while to get those.
It's funny you bring that up.
Yeah, right. That's all just because right. We have a lot of people buying t-shirts, which is awesome.
That's right. That's all right, good. Guys. See you later.
Thank you.